Okay, so picture this. You're settling in for a spooky story. You know, the kind of, right, like a rambling old house shadows getting longer as the sun goes down and the wind howls, almost like someone's crying out. Getting those goosebumps yet? Perfect, because today we're diving headfirst into a classic ghost story, Henry James's The Turn of the Screw.
And it's not just any ghost story.
Right.
This one comes straight from a manuscript, a first-hand account from a young governess. Talk about spunky.
Super spooky. Okay, so imagine you're this governess, right? Young and excited for this new job, and you find yourself at Bly, this massive estate that just screams gothic. We're talking long hallways, gardens that haven't been touched in years, and maybe even a gargoyle or two, just for good measure. And you're there to take care of these two kids, Miles and Flora, who at first seem totally adorable. But here's where it gets good. You find out you're not the first governess they've had. There was another one, Miss Jessel, and well, let's just say it didn't end well for her. I don't know about you, but I'm already checking under the bed.
And that's Henry James at his finest. He's a master of foreshadowing, using those classic gothic elements like the mystery surrounding the previous governess to draw us in. It's like he's leaving a trail of breadcrumbs, leading us deeper into the darkness.
Totally. And it works every time. It's like those little things in horror movies. You know, flickering lights, a creepy old house, whispers about a dark past. They all play on our deepest fears, those things that make us look over our shoulder even when we know we're alone.
It's tapping into something primal.
Exactly. It's like that feeling you get when you think someone's watching you, but you're not quite sure. And speaking of not being sure, as the story goes on, our governess starts to experience some, well, let's call them incidents.
And these aren't just things that go bump in the night.
Oh,
We're
no.
talking full-on ghostly apparitions.
Okay, now we're getting to the good stuff. So, how does James pull this off?
Well, this is where his skill as a writer really shines. He introduces the idea of an unreliable narrator.
Okay, for those of us who aren't literary experts, what exactly does that mean?
Think of it this way. Everything we know about the haunting of the children, even Bly itself, we're seeing it all through the governess's eyes.
Okay.
But what if her version of reality is a little, let's say, distorted? Maybe she's not seeing things as they truly are.
Whoa, hold on a minute. So you're saying we have to question everything?
Exactly. Is our governess really a brave woman fighting off actual ghosts? Or is she slowly losing her mind,
Yeah.
caught in her own terrifying imagination?
Now that is a chilling thought.
And that's what makes The Turn of the Screw so captivating. We're right there with her, questioning every detail, every shadow, trying to decide if we believe her story or not.
Talk about a creepy conundrum. I mean, how do you even begin to unravel that? Okay, so we've got this creepy old house, these mysterious figures floating around, and a narrator who might not be as reliable as we thought. But what about the kids in all of this, Miles and Flora? They can't possibly be involved in this ghostly conspiracy, can they?
See, that's the question that sticks with you, James. Is so clever the way he plays with our ideas about childhood innocence. On the surface, Miles and Flora are charming. They're almost captivatingly beautiful. But there's just something not quite right about them.
Okay, not quite right. How? Give me the spooky details.
Well, there are these moments, little hints that something darker is hidden beneath the surface. Like Miles, for instance. He's described as being strangely aware, precocious. It just doesn't quite match up with his age, you know?
Interesting.
And then there's this way both kids seem to have their own little world. These odd games they play, the knowing looks they exchange. It's as if they're deliberately excluding the governess.
Oh, I see. So they're in on something. But what?
Exactly.
Had
And to
grown.
make matters even creepier, neither Miles nor Flora ever mentions the names Quint or Jessel.
Really?
It's like those names are forbidden taboo, which of course just makes the governess even more
Oh,
suspicious.
absolutely. It's like they're playing a game with her, but she doesn't know the rules, and the stakes just keep getting higher.
Exactly. James was a master of psychological suspense, and he uses this pact of silence to really ramp up the feeling of dread. It's as if the things that aren't said, the words left hanging in the air, become even more terrifying than any ghostly apparition.
It's like that feeling you get when you know something's wrong, but you just can't put your finger on it.
Precisely. And just when you think things couldn't get any weirder. Remember that sense of being watched we talked about?
Yeah.
Well, imagine you're the governess looking out the window one night, and you see Miles standing in the garden talking to seemingly no one.
Oh no. He sees the ghosts too.
That scene with the pale moonlight and those hushed whispers directed at some unseen presence, it's pure nightmare fuel. And it sends the governess even further down the rabbit hole of her own paranoia and fear.
Okay, so she's seeing things, hearing things, and now the kid she's supposed to be looking after is talking to thin air.
Right.
I wouldn't blame her for wanting to jump on the next train out of there.
And it gets worse. Later that night, she finds Flora's bed empty.
No way. Are you kidding?
The terror she feels is palpable. It's clear that the lines between reality and nightmare are blurring not just for the governess, but for us the readers too.
Yeah, we're right there with her starting to question everything.
Absolutely. But here's where James's true genius shines through. He's not content with just scaring us with ghosts and shadows. He wants us to question the very nature of what we perceive as real.
Okay, so that's a terrifying thought. But if the governess is genuinely afraid, if she really believes she's in danger, who does she turn to? She's all alone in that house, right?
That's just it. She's completely isolated, trapped in her own terror, which only makes her paranoia worse. There's no one to tell her if she's really seeing ghosts or if she's losing her mind. No one to validate her experiences.
And that feeling of isolation, that sense of being imprisoned with your own terrifying thoughts, that's what makes this story so unsettling, even for us, the readers. We're safe and sound, but we still feel that creeping sense of unease.
Exactly. James understood the power of the human psyche, the darkness that can fester when we're alone. And he expertly uses this isolation to ratchet up the suspense. We start to question not just the governess's sanity, but our own grasp on reality as well.
So we're stuck in this gothic nightmare, right, with this governess, who is absolutely convinced she's fighting a supernatural battle for these children's souls.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that's been bugging me. Is she really protecting them, or is it her fear that's actually putting them in danger?
That's the genius of James's writing, isn't it? He forces us to consider the possibility that the governess's love for these children, as real as it may be, could be turning into something well destructive.
Because she's so sure these ghosts are real, right? That's what drives her.
Absolutely, and that conviction dictates everything she does.
Mm.
Take her confrontation with Miss Jessel by the lake, for example. It's a truly spine-chilling scene.
Oh yeah, what happens?
The governess is positive that Jessel is trying to claim Flora to lure her into the ghostly world.
So she's trying to, like, possess her, take her over.
Right. And the governess, she fights back. She challenges Miss Jessel, asserting her own role as protector, as if she could actually shield Flora from this spectral predator. The scene is so intense, you can almost feel the unspoken question hanging in the air. Is the governess truly strong enough to combat this unseen force? Or is she just falling deeper into her own delusion?
Man, it's giving me chills just thinking about it. But the real tragedy, the part that really gets to you, is what happens to Miles, right?
Yes. And it all builds to this devastating climax. The governess, she's convinced that Quint's hold over Miles is growing stronger. So she decides to take drastic measures.
What does she do?
She confronts Miles, forces him to acknowledge Quint's presence. And it's in that moment of sheer terror that Miles cries out, "Peter, Quint, you devil!" And then he collapses.
Oh no, he doesn't. He dies.
And with his death, the story takes its final heartbreaking turn. James doesn't explicitly tell us what kills Miles.
So what happened?
We're left to wonder, did he die from pure terror, overwhelmed by the governess's accusations and his own fear? Or was it something more sinister, some supernatural force that tightens its grip as she tries to intervene?
Oh, wow. So we're left with this awful ambiguity, this possibility that the governess's actions, her desperate attempts to protect Miles, might have actually led to his death.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. James makes us grapple with that horrible possibility. He forces us to question the very nature of good intentions and the potential for devastating consequences.
Talk about a chilling thought to end on. You know, this whole story has been like a puzzle box with layers upon layers of meaning.
It really is.
Just when you think you've unlocked a piece of the truth, another question pops up. So tell me, after diving into this chilling tale, after walking through the dark corridors of Bly and confronting the ghosts of our own perceptions, what you believe? Was the governess a victim of the supernatural pushed to the edge by forces beyond her control? Or did her love, her fear, become a prison, a suffocating force that ultimately destroyed the children she was so desperate to save?
It's impossible to say for sure.
I know. There's no easy answer, no single right interpretation. And I think that's the real power of The Turn of the Screw.
Definitely.
It stays with you long after you finished reading it. It makes you think about those things that lurk in the shadows of your own mind. And ultimately, it forces you to confront your own interpretations of the unseen, the unknown, and the terrifying power of our own perceptions.
It's a story that never really leaves you.
Well said. And on that note, until next time, keep those lanterns lit and those shadows at bay.